Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show,
living off with
a variety talk show whose only
all
mission
is to empower
you.
That were only gonna bring me to my knees. And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome, and thank you for tuning in today. Today is very special to me. This month is very special to me. In case you didn't know, October is Down Syndrome Awareness Month. My youngest son of two was diagnosed with Down Syndrome after birth. He was tested in the hospital, but we had to, of course, take him to the geneticist doctor to get the results. I remember receiving a phone call from one of the representatives at Emory, and she met us at the office, at the doctor's office, when we received the results. She helped us get set up with early intervention program here in Atlanta called Babies Can't Wait. She also gave us a welcome package, which included a book on to give us more information on Down syndrome. And she also offered, you know, to answer any questions that we had pertaining to Down syndrome. One of the reasons for this program is because of the efforts of Emory University Down Syndrome Research Team. And back in April of this year, I wrote, directed, and produced a stage production called Then You Stand, which you can find out more information about that if you're following me on Facebook or Twitter. And it's YPierre01 on Facebook, and it's YPierre on Twitter. But I will be posting a video from Then You Stand, and I'll be making it available online for free on October 21st. But I encourage viewers to continue to make donations of any amount, even if it's a dollar, toward Down syndrome research and the information. I'll provide that information along with the video. So prior to putting this event together, putting Then You Stand together, I was trying to think of an organization that I wanted the proceeds to go to, and without hesitation, I reached out to Emory Down Syndrome Research Team. I'm so grateful for all the work that they've done and continue to do for the Down syndrome community. It's an honor of Down Syndrome Awareness Month, I've invited the head of this team to join me today to discuss Down syndrome research. Dr. Stephanie Sherman is a professor geneticist that has spent more than two decades studying the causes and consequences of Down syndrome at Emory University Department of Human Genetics. Here in Atlanta. Over the years, she has collected a large Down syndrome database in the country. They have one of the largest in the country, thanks to children and families who have participated in studies at Emory. And I would like to say welcome, Dr. Sherman, and it is such a honor to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very excited to be here.
I want to start off with, I guess, some basic questions, kind of basic questions. Dr. Sherman, if you could share with us how many infants are born each year with Down syndrome and what causes Down syndrome.
Okay, well, to start, the estimate now in the U.S. for the number of infants that are born with Down syndrome is about 1 in 700 infants. So that is something like, well, the estimate, if you try to look at, you know, from birth to 19 years of individuals living with Down syndrome in the U.S., that's something like 500,000 individuals with Down syndrome, you know, up to that adolescent years. And actually, CDC, you know, the Centers for Disease Control here in Atlanta, is working very hard to get a better estimate to really understand how many Americans have Down syndrome, you know, for all ages, from birth through the end of their lifespan.
Okay.
So what causes Down syndrome? Down syndrome is caused by having an extra chromosome 21. So let me explain a little bit about genetics, so I'm sure the audience, you know, is knows a lot of this. I'll just put everybody on the same page.
Okay.
Typically, everybody has 46 chromosomes in each cell, and chromosomes are those structures that are passed down from parent to child that contain our genetic information. Those 46 chromosomes are really made up of 23 pairs of chromosomes, half of which we get from our mom and half from our dads. Down syndrome, as I said, is caused by having not just two chromosome 21s, the chromosome 21 is the smallest of the chromosomes that we have, but instead they have three chromosome 21s. So sometimes you'll hear Down syndrome called trisomy 21, just to essentially point out that there's three chromosome 21s. That extra chromosome, then, it carries about 250 or so genes. And if we think of a gene being kind of the units of information that tell the body, you know, how to make a certain tissue or how to function in a certain way, so having 250 extra genes is what causes a problem. So Down syndrome is really caused by having too much information, not like the wrong information that you sometimes hear for other genetic conditions.
Wow. That really, not only does it make sense, but it I get it. what are, you know, when Zion was born, they recognized, of course, his eyes, and one of the doctors recognized certain features that he had to kind of give them an indication that he might have Down syndrome and that we needed to test him. But what are some of the symptoms of Down syndrome?
Okay, so like you said, one of the symptoms that almost all babies have with Down syndrome are those characteristic, you know, facial features that the doctors noted in Zion and that most people recognize as someone who has Down syndrome. So that's pretty common. And then almost all individuals with Down syndrome have some degree of developmental and intellectual delay and disabilities. And also, almost all the babies born with Down syndrome have a really low muscle tone. So sometimes you'll hear them called by the doctors floppy babies because they can't, you know, keep their muscle tensed. So those are the features that you see in almost all babies with Down syndrome. But from that point on, it varies tremendously. So let's see. Let me give you an example. So some of the babies have heart defects, some very severe, some minor. But then some of the babies have structurally normal hearts. Similarly with gastrointestinal defects or gut defects, about 10% of babies have some significant, you know, obstructions that need to be surgically repaired. And then the rest have no problems with gastrointestinal tracts, or they're intact. So that's something. So there's significant birth defects that are associated, but they're not always there. One other thing that is a problem, you know, in the early childhood, is that there are a lot of infections that the kids go through, usually respiratory tract infections. So, for example, parents report that one of the most significant health conditions among their young children with Down syndrome are the recurrent ear infections. And it might sound trivial, but it's so important because it seems that these ear infections might lead to the high incidence of hearing loss. And when there's hearing loss, and you know, the learning language and everything gets becomes delayed. So that's one of the things that's really important to take care of. And some of that, they think, is due to the some of the facial structure that leads, or the structure of the ear that really causes the canal from the outer ear to the middle ear to be narrow. And it kind of traps fluid and causes infections that way. So some of the structures of the face will lead to problems.
Wow.
And, you know, in that same frame, in terms of the structure of the face, another outcome for some of the children is sleep apnea, or airway obstruction. And that's very common in Down syndrome. And it leads to significant sleep problems. In fact, it's so common, I mean, now it's recognized as being very common, and so common that the pediatric guidelines are suggesting that toddlers, you know, when they're around age two, that they go ahead and get these sleep tests done, so that you can begin to see if there are sleep problems, if there's any kind of obstruction, and really get on top of it. So that's another symptom of Down syndrome. Let's see.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to the different symptoms, and I just keep hearing you say that, you know, that they have 200 extra feeds of information, and I'm just, you know, it's a lot of things that are going on with Zion is just clicking as you're speaking. It makes sense that of the infections and the different things that go on, because their body is almost overloaded with genes, with information.
Yeah. Information, yeah. And information that's telling some other genes to do something at the wrong time, or, you know, or doing something too much. Yeah, so you're exactly right. You can kind of get the idea of what's going on in those cells.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other symptoms. I'm assuming were you getting ready to cover that, or
yeah, like you said, there's another one that, again, you can kind of get the idea of this uncontrolled result related to the over information, and that's the risk for, again, this, not everybody goes to this, but the risk for specific types of leukemia, childhood cancers. Though now they're well treated, it is a problem, and they're unique to some of the cancers are quite unique to individuals with Down syndrome. Some of the babies, in fact, go through a period around in infancy where it looks like they have leukemia. Sometimes it's called transient leukemia or transient myeloproliferative disease, but it looks like they have cancer based on their, you know, when you get a blood test, you can kind of see a different profile of what cells are there. But then it goes away. But some of those kids that had this transient leukemia later on in childhood will have the full-blown lymphoblastic leukemia or megakaryoblastic leukemia. Again, these kinds of disorders are present in individuals without Down syndrome, but they're much more common in children with Down syndrome.
What is the chance of a child having Down syndrome?
Of having Down syndrome?
What are the
syndrome?
Chances of having a child with Down syndrome?
Well, Down syndrome really is. Well, let me back up a bit, because there's three ways that you can get that extra chromosome 21.
Mm-hmm.
One, and the most common way, is just a spontaneous event during the formation of either eggs or sperm, right? So this spontaneous event happens, which we're trying to understand better, that leads to, during the cell division, during that formation of the egg or sperm, the chromosome just moves the wrong way, you know, goes to the wrong daughter cell. And that, again, leads to the extra chromosome 21 once the egg or the sperm is fertilized. Now, that happens when it happens in egg, it's highly associated with actually the age of the egg. And just to kind of put that in perspective, in the formation of eggs is very unique for women compared to the timing of the formation of sperm. So eggs are started to be made in the fetus of a female. So, you know, after conception, about something like 12 to 16 weeks, the egg is actually, the cell division that eventually leads to the formation of the egg is started. So everything gears up, that division, you know, the chromosomes start to pair with each other, for example. They start to tether themselves together, and then it's frozen. That whole cell division stops. And nothing starts up again until that particular cell is recruited to be ovulated. So it's something like 10 years later or 50 years later, depending on when that particular, you know, egg is to be used or to be ovulated, does the whole cell, the cell division realizes because of a hormone signal, okay, I got to start up again, finish this up, and become fertilized. So really the age of that egg has influence on whether that whole event of moving the chromosomes around properly to each cell in each cell division. So, for example, something like a woman who's 25 years old or her egg's about that old, the chance of having this spontaneous event is about 1 in 1,200. Or if you take a woman who's 35 years old, it's about 1 in 350. Or if you take a woman who's 45 years old, it's something like 1 in 50. So the older the egg is, the more chance it has to have this spontaneous event. So that's one form of how you get, one way that you can get Down syndrome. And that's the most common way. Something like 95% of individuals with Down syndrome are the result of this spontaneous event. Not inherited. It's not inherited. It's a spontaneous event. Occurs among all racial groups or among all ethnic groups, all socioeconomic, you know, levels, everything. Then there's another type that is much more rare, and that is the extra chromosome 21 being due to what they call a chromosome translocation. And that's just where the extra chromosome material is stuck on to another chromosome, you know, one of the other numbers, like chromosome 14 or chromosome 15. So about 4% of individuals with Down syndrome have this kind of event. Sometimes that type of event is inherited. Not very often, but something like a third of that 4% can be inherited, and so you might see Down syndrome occurring in, you know, in relatives. But you can pick that up on a test. And then the last kind is called mosaic, the last way, and that's just as mosaic means, it's a mixture of cells that are form the body. Some of them have the extra chromosome 21, and some of them don't. And about 1 to 2% of individuals with Down syndrome have this mosaic kind of outcome. So the most are due to the spontaneous event. A lot of that is related to the age of the oocyte, and then a very small proportion to the translocation and to the mosaic errors.
Wow. I'm just sitting here. I'm learning a lot. Even when you touched on the age of the egg, I had no idea that women, we develop our eggs as a fetus, as we are a
right.
fetus, and yeah. that it ages, the eggs age with us. I never knew that. I'm just
yeah.
sitting here in awe. Years ago, the lifespan of an individual with Down syndrome was 25 years. I remember reading that not that long ago, that the lifespan was 25 years old. Today, the lifespan is around 50. Assuming that the lifespan is 25 years longer due to improved, I'm assuming that is due to improved health. How has the health for individuals with Down syndrome improved over the years due to research?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think the main reason for the increase in survival is really due to medical advances. It really is due to primarily the ability to surgically repair those itty-bitty hearts.
I've never
seen one in person, the heart surgery. I've seen a video of it. Oh, my goodness. The hearts are just so tiny, and these surgeons are so talented and now experienced in actually being able to repair the hearts. So that technology or that that medical advance has really made a big difference. The ability to treat these recurrent infections has really helped. So a lot of the advances around the having medical interventions to help the child make it through that early infancy state where there's a lot of problems going on. Once
yeah.
they can get through that state, then the survival has increased. And I would also suggest that the increase in survival is due to the greater acceptance of individuals with Down syndrome in our community. You know, before
yeah.
they were institutionalized,
yeah.
I think that in itself is not the best place to grow up. But
right.
being integrated in the community has to have helped in terms of helping to survive much longer.
I can see that. That the extension of their lives, it wasn't maybe 40 years ago they were institutionalized and they weren't given the same services that's provided right now, whether it's the therapy and the education.
Even preventive medical services, you know, making sure they're up to date on their immunizations and not just saying, oh, well, they have Down syndrome and it's not necessary. I mean, that's a very old way of thinking of things, but that really has changed and helped in terms of improving the life.
I like that. What are some programs that have developed over the years? And I know I mentioned earlier about Babies Can't Wait here in Atlanta has kind of spawned off of the research that your team has done. What other programs have developed due to research?
Well, you know, it's interesting. At this point, there hasn't been as much targeted research for interventions specifically for individuals with Down syndrome. It really what most researchers have done at this point is tried to help ameliorate a particular symptom, like language development, and not just targeted to the language development pattern that they see among individuals with Down syndrome, but just in general language development in those who have intellectual disabilities. So as you mentioned, having the programs where you, once you identify an infant with language and learning delays and delays in motor skill, they are immediately connected to these early intervention programs, like the Babies Can't Wait.
Yeah.
So that very early intervention with physical therapy and speech therapy and teaching the parents those kinds of therapies have helped a lot. But it is interesting to me that when you do read the research studies that are ongoing, they really are a collective group of individuals. And more now, we recognize that like the patterns of learning or the patterns of language delay are really specific to the underlying cause of them, to Down syndrome, or another example, to Fragile X syndrome. So that's the push now, is to really not just look at the symptom, but start with the group that has the same kind of problem, and see if there's something targeted we can do that really addresses kind of the underlying biology, right, of what's going on. But that's not there. It's not here yet. Irrespective, approaching it from the other way is improving aspects of learning and aspects of language. So it's not like those things have failed. I don't mean to imply that. So, for example, helping the child develop skills for self-care like feeding. There's specific interventions that can be done, or helping the parent be involved in language development by really focusing on, for example, the behavior of the child. So if they have autistic-like features, there's certain ways that a parent can interact to engage the child more and actually be more engaged themselves. That then helps in language development. So those kinds of really excellent programs are being developed at this point.
What type of research is currently going on?
Let's see. Right now, it's interesting, Yvonne. Right now, what's happening right at this moment, up until October, I think it's 17th, the National Institute of Health, right, that's who is our federal funding agency, is engaging the whole community, scientists, parents, other stakeholders, to ask their opinion about where the gaps in terms of research for Down syndrome. So they've put out what they call a request for information. And anyone can respond. And essentially what they want to know is, where should we put our money? It's limited. So where are we going to get the best effect to increase the quality of life for individuals with Down syndrome? It's kind of an interesting exercise because it does engage the whole community. And so everybody can be heard. So I encourage you to get on the internet and respond to that RFI. But what's going on now? I kind of see two main areas, I guess you would say. One is what you'd expect: understanding why that extra genetic information alters the development and the aging process in individuals in Down syndrome. And once understanding that, then identify those points where interventions can be developed. So that's one. So really looking at the biology related to having the extra chromosome 21. And then the other is more from a, I don't know if you'd say practical, more from a practical end. And that's really doing what we were talking about before in terms of interventions. What are the best educational interventions, best behavioral interventions? What are the best interventions you can do with the family and its dynamics to help the person develop better who has Down syndrome? So I think there's very much those two sides of things. One more is really just doing surveillance. You know, what we were talking about in the very beginning of the show is we really need to know, you know, how many individuals with Down syndrome are there in the U.S.? What are their main problems throughout their lifespan so that we can plan ahead and know what kind of health care resources we need, what kind of educational resources we need to develop, what kind of care and residential, you know, facilities really maximize the quality of life. So perhaps in those three general areas.
I want to go back real quick and ask, you mentioned about the National Institute of Health, the program that they're posing right now to see where the efforts need to be focused as far as Down syndrome research. How can we get involved with that?
Let me, I can, if you search, I'm trying to think, I shouldn't do this right now, but I always do this, it's NIH, RFI, Down syndrome, because you can go to the website and just put into Google or whatever other, request for information, Down syndrome, and NIH, and that will come up with the website that tells you how to do it.
I see it. I was typing as you was talking.
And you see how if you scroll down, it says how to submit a response. I am in an old one.
I think I see it, and what I'll do too is post it on. I'll post it on here and post it on my page.
Yeah, and
well.
I'll get it. I'll be more. I can. I'm sorry. I should have had that.
I see it. I think I see it. It's on.
Okay.
Opportunity for input. The NDSS has it on their website as well. The National Down Syndrome Society has the information on their website under research funding. And I'll also post that on the description for this show as well as on my Facebook and stuff like that so people can participate.
Great.
Okay, so I want to go back to and I understand there's a lot of different things that, I mean, I understand that research typically takes a very long time. Over the past 10 years, technology has actually boomed. It has really blossomed, thankfully. And how has the growth of technology improved the process of research?
That's a really good question. One thing I would say that has really helped is just building these huge resources that we've done and communicating. So let me be more specific. So the Human Genome Project, which provided the sequence of all 46 chromosomes, or 23, as I said, because they're pairs and they're identical. So providing the sequence of an individual and getting that, and through that first exercise of doing that, developing the technology to make it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper so that you can begin to, what you're essentially doing when you're sequencing the whole genome, as they say, you are looking at all the differences from one individual to another. Now, there's not a lot of them, right? There's like 1% of that whole billions of base pairs that make up the genome. Only 1% of those are different from person to person. So actually finding those is difficult. You have to sequence the whole genome to find them. But if you can find them, you can start to say, okay, what of those changes might be involved in, say, heart development in an individual with Down syndrome? Or what of those changes might be causing, you know, the premature aging that you see in individuals with Down syndrome? So we can do that, you know, characterizing the genetic differences. And now we have this whole resource out there to compare, to say, okay, these differences exist and are different than another group of people that don't have Down syndrome. So building these resources and having them available has just really increased your ability to ask the important questions. So that's the Human Genome Project. And then what people have done, the technology is not only at the genetic level, but then you can come up one level and say, okay, there's now technology that can describe which genes are being expressed and at what level. Now, and that's where we think a lot of the issues are coming in Down syndrome, is that because we know some of those genes on chromosome 21 are being overexpressed, we want to know what are the other genes that are affected, and are they also being overexpressed or underexpressed? So you can look at, and that's called looking at the transcriptome. So it's another fancy word, but just looking at which genes are being expressed in what cells and at what level. So again, that huge gain of information and being able to share it so that you automatically have these resources for comparison is so important. And you can go on. I mean, you can go on to the next level, which they call proteomics. So now you're looking at what is the proteins that are actually being made at a very large scale. You know, you can take cells and say, okay, I'm going to look at the whole profile of proteins and understand the differences. Now, at each one of those, once you understand the difference, you can really say, okay, it's in this particular pathway that I now understand. And then you can say, well, how can I alter that pathway? How can I make it come back into balance? And in fact, just I'll go off topic here for a second. In fact, that's what they're doing. That's what they found in Down syndrome, that they've understand now that some of the pathways involved in communication between neurons, you know, that pass information from one neuron to the other, they now understand that there is an imbalance, and now they have a particular drug that the Roche Pharmaceutical Company thinks will help put that back into balance. Now, that's now what we were talking about before. That's a really targeted treatment. That's saying, okay, I understand the biology behind the, you know, the way neurons are talking to each other in a brain with an extra chromosome 21, and I know that this is upregulated and this is downregulated, so let me balance that. So, you know, they're now in a clinical trial to try to investigate the safety and, you know, and tolerance of this particular drug. They're at the very early points of the clinical trial, but, you know, they always have to study how safe it is. And then the next phase will be studying, is it really making a difference? You know, does it make a difference in learning or in behavior? So that's something, again, I wasn't sure we would ever get there in my lifetime. And it's a real start. And it really is because of these new technologies to to characterize the genome, the transcriptome, you know, all these omics kinds of things. And the technology, because of these huge types of data that we are now characterizing, the other big technological advance is in the computer technology and bioinformatics, or the way to actually comb through all those data to find the differences. So that has really changed the field drastically.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm listening and I'm taking notes, and this is really, you know, from me being around Zion all the time, everything that you're saying is really starting to make a lot of stuff make sense with what's going on with him, with his digestive issues, his skin. It's all starting to kind of make sense because the system is, because I'm assuming in those genes is also vitamins and minerals and different things that the body need, and proteins, and he's overloaded with them, assuming.
Right. And, you know, and as you say, either overloaded or underloaded, because it can go both ways. If you've got too much of something, it might cause something to be diminished more quickly. So mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. Looking at that whole nutritional profile is important.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. How can families, you know, whether, because I know you all, part of your database is outside of Atlanta as well, how can families get more involved with being, with helping with the research that you're doing?
Oh, that that's really an exciting question to ask. First, I have to say that, you know, all the work, you know, what you were mentioning originally about our database and our wonderful success in building that database is really completely the result of all the participation from the families. It's been wonderful. Depending on what project that we can describe, they vary in terms of whether we need to have the parents come to Emory or not. So let me back up again and say, for example, one study that we're doing, we're really trying to understand better the heart defects that occur among individuals with Down syndrome. We really think that, you know, we might be able to repair the heart defects early on, but congenital heart defects, we know, is still a bad heart even though you repair it. So we're trying to find ways to understand what genes, what environmental factors might play a role in that abnormal heart development. So in that study, what we do is we ask parents with children from infancy to up to 40 years of age to take part in our study, and what that involves is the mother doing a interview with us after we get informed consent. All can be done over the telephone, and then asking for a release of medical records so we can really clearly define if there is a heart problem or not, and what type of heart defect occurred, or if there's no heart defect at all, right? Because we have a comparison group,
uh-huh.
And then we ask the parent to help us get blood from themselves, from the mom and the dad, and from the individual with Down syndrome. Now for that, we always try to, what we call is kind of essentially piggyback on a blood draw that the individual with Down syndrome is having for some other reason. For example, for their annual thyroid check, we just ask the doc to give us an extra tube of blood. That blood is used for genetic studies. And so for that heart study, an individual can do everything without coming to Emory at all. So it can be done across the U.S. We have 4 sites across the U.S. that help coordinate the families to get all the information together and help them, you know, find a way to get blood samples, blood drawn easily at different patient care sites. So that's one study that we're doing. Another one involves, again, looking at the variation that we see in cognition or the ability to learn and behavioral problems. So as I said, there's a wide variation. There must be a reason for this variation. So we're taking the same approach by an interview with the mother after consent, getting blood samples, and as well the release of medical records. And then for this one, there's a bigger component because we have the individual with Down syndrome doing a 2.5, sometimes 3-hour set of tests. You know, they're more like computer games to really try to understand their strengths and their weaknesses in terms of learning. So for that one, the individuals are coming into our site, or if we can, and this is only because of limited money, if we can get a couple or, you know, 4 or 5 families together at a particular site, we can actually travel to them and do the testing, you know, over a weekend or something like that. So that one's a little bit more involved in terms of, you know, having to travel either us to them or, you know, them to us. So those are two examples of the studies that we're doing at this point. So they can become involved at, you know, at different levels. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Because I think probably a lot of people probably assume research. they're gonna, you know. Well, there's no telling where the mind goes when they think of research, but dissect the children or something, I'm not sure. So you're saying pretty much it's more like just sharing information and maybe a draw of blood or something. It's painless.
That's right. It's minimal in that sense. And it really does help us understand, you know, the outcomes, and then to really start to identify what genes might be involved or what's going on biologically.
So let's say, you know, I think I am already in your database, but let's say I wanted to participate in a current study, or if someone who is not already in the database, no matter where they live here in the U.S., if they want to participate, do they go to the website, or how do they initiate that they want to be a part of the research?
Yeah, so they could go to our website, which is, again, if you enter Emory Down Syndrome Center, that gives the names of people to contact. The woman who is the overall director, or the man, I'm not sure, a project coordinator, I think we would call her. She's the be-all, end-all, let me just put it.
Okay.
Tracy Rosser. And she can be reached, you know, I can give a phone number if that would work.
It's up to you.
Again, the website's probably better, I would guess.
Okay.
I mean, that same website has in the information about the Down Syndrome Clinic also. So it has both the research and the clinic information there.
And that website, I just looked it up. It's genetics.emory.edu/DSC. Again, that's genetics, GENETICS dot Emory, Emory .edu/ DSC, and I'll put that information on the website as well.
Great, thank you.
There's just so much information. Emory offers a lot of different programs for families with Down syndrome. They, like you just mentioned, the Down Syndrome Center, they have the clinic. Could you tell us what types of services the clinic offers?
Right. So the clinic is directed by Dr. Jeannie Vasutsik. She's a developmental pediatrician. It started in 2003, I think it was. And at that point, they saw children who had a confirmed diagnosis of Down syndrome from birth to 3 years of age. So they started with a small group, and then they've essentially grown with their family. So now they see children up to age 11. And so each appointment is a private appointment. It usually starts with the parent calling the clinical staff, and that individual will really try to understand where the family is in terms of what their needs are. Then that team works closely with the family to make sure that they understand the diagnosis, so genetic counseling. They'll do a medical evaluation of the child. And again, this is usually most important for the newly diagnosed families. And then the clinic will help connect the families to the various resources in Atlanta or the state, you know, depending on where the family comes from. For the older children, so when they begin school, the clinic will also provide educational consultations. So their team will work really closely with the families to make sure that all the recommendations that they have made are well, number one, practical, and that they can have their needs met, both in the educational setting and at home. I think the important thing to say is that it's the clinic is not a replacement for pediatric care. It's not they don't serve as a regular pediatric unit, but instead they kind of provide a way for parents to really understand more about Down syndrome and discuss what questions they have related to the strengths and challenges that they might encounter, and they do that working with the whole family at once. So it's really tailored to the family and to the diagnosis of Down syndrome.
Well, I want to, before we go, I want to ask if someone don't have a family member or they don't have any a loved one or anything that have Down syndrome, but they want to help. How can they be supportive of this cause?
I would say one way would to really engage individuals with Down syndrome into their own community. I think just being aware of just the strengths and the wonderful aspects of Down syndrome, there's just integration that is so helpful for everybody in the community, not just the individuals with Down syndrome. So engaging individuals with Down syndrome is so important. And then I would suggest that, if they want to donate, there's very many ways to do donating time or donating money to the Down syndrome parent group of your choice or to a research group. There's many ways to get involved in helping to improve, the life of an individual with Down syndrome.
Dr. Stephanie Sherman, I want to thank you so much. I'm just overloaded with information. I've been sitting here taking notes, and this has really, really, really been an eye-opener for me, all the information that you provided. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and also for all that you and your team and Emory and everyone who that's a part of the research efforts. I want to thank you all for what you do and what you continue to do to improve the lives of individuals with Down syndrome. So I want to personally say to you, thank you so much. It is very much appreciated.
Thank you. Oh, well, thank you, Ivana. It's a pleasure, and I just want to give that thanks back to you. You are such a creative and exciting person that pushes this, you know, pushes us all to the to our potential, you know, just to really contribute. I appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you. You have a wonderful day. And again, I'll provide the information. And let me say the website one more time before we go. It's genetics, G-E-N-E-T-I-C-S dot Emory, E-M-O-R-Y dot E-D-U. And they can click to the research and the clinic and all the information regarding the human genetics department is there on that link. And again, thank you so much for joining us, and it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
How wonderful. Thank you again.
I was meant to fly.
Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not gonna let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I thank you for choosing this time to spend with me, your host, Ivana Pierre. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to simply let me know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit me at ypierre.com. That's www.ypierre.com. Remember to keep God first. Know that you are blessed, and always stay true to yourself. I love you, God loves you, and thank you for listening.
I was meant to fly.